A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one about tire maintenance. He's asking three things. One, tire pressure across seasons. How often to check? General parameters and digital versus manual pressure gauges. Two, mixing tire manufacturers on older cars. Is it as bad as it sounds? And three, tread wear monitoring between inspections. How do you know when it's hit the danger zone? I'll admit, this is one of those topics where most people just wait for a warning light and hope for the best.
That's exactly the problem. Waiting for the warning light means you're already late. TPMS, the tire pressure monitoring system, the little light on your dash, by the time that triggers, you're already at least 25% below the recommended pressure. That's the federal threshold. So you're driving around underinflated for who knows how long before the car even bothers to tell you.
25% below. That's like your smoke detector waiting until the curtains are on fire.
And underinflation is where the real danger lives. The NHTSA did a big study. They found that tires underinflated by 25% or more are 3 times more likely to be involved in a crash. Not a flat tire, not a blowout. This is the kind of thing where the data is genuinely alarming and nobody pays attention to it.
Let's start with the basics. Pressure and seasons. What are the general parameters here?
The first thing to know is that the number on the tire sidewall is wrong. That's not the pressure you want. That's the maximum pressure the tire can handle. It's a safety ceiling, not a recommendation. The actual number you want is on a sticker inside the driver's door jamb. Every car has one. That's the manufacturer's spec for that specific vehicle, accounting for weight, suspension, handling characteristics, the whole thing.
I'm guessing most people have never looked at that sticker.
Most people don't know it exists. They see the big number on the tire and think that's the target. So you've got drivers out there inflating to 44 PSI because the tire says 44 max when the car actually calls for 32. That's an overinflated tire. Less contact patch, uneven wear down the center, harsher ride, worse wet traction.
The car equivalent of walking on your tiptoes.
That's actually not a bad image. And then on the flip side, underinflation means the edges of the tread take all the load. The center bows inward. So you get excessive wear on both shoulders, the tire runs hotter, and you're losing fuel economy. The Department of Energy says that for every 1 PSI drop across all 4 tires, you lose about 0.2% in fuel efficiency. Doesn't sound like much, but most cars on the road are running 5 to 10 PSI low without the driver knowing it. That's 1 to 2% worse gas mileage constantly, plus the safety risk.
What's the seasonal piece of this? I know pressure changes with temperature.
This is where it gets interesting. The rule of thumb is about 1 PSI for every 10 degrees Fahrenheit change in ambient temperature. When summer turns to fall, your tire pressure drops. When winter turns to spring, it rises. So if you set your tires to 35 PSI on a 90 degree summer day, they could be down around 29 or 30 on a 40 degree morning in November.
Which means the first cold snap of the year is when half the cars on the road suddenly have underinflated tires.
And that's also when TPMS lights all come on at once. Every mechanic knows this. First cold morning of autumn, the shop is flooded with people who think they have 4 simultaneous leaks. They don't. It's just physics. The air molecules are less energetic. They take up less space. Pressure drops.
The air got sleepy.
In a sense, yes. So the practical advice is, check your pressure at least once a month. And if you're heading into a season change, check it then too. Don't wait for the light.
What about the gauge itself? Daniel asked about digital versus manual. I've got opinions here, but I want to hear yours first.
I'm going to give you a take that might surprise you. For most people, a good quality manual gauge, the kind with the sliding stick that pops out, is more reliable than a cheap digital one. The digital gauges at the checkout counter of the auto parts store for $6? Those things are wildly inconsistent. I've seen them read 3 or 4 PSI off from each other back to back. A decent mechanical gauge from a brand like Milton or Longacre, something in the $15 to $20 range, though they're accurate to within half a PSI and they'll last forever.
There's something satisfying about the stick shooting out.
There really is. It's tactile. You know it worked. But I'll qualify this. If you're willing to spend a bit more, there are digital gauges that are excellent. The Jocko Elite Pro, the Astro AI units with the backlit display. Some of these are calibrated to plus or minus 0.5% accuracy. That's professional grade, and they're easier to read in the dark.
What about the gauges built into the air pump at the gas station?
Assume they're lying to you. Those things get dropped on concrete, run over, rained on, frozen, baked in the sun. They're almost never calibrated. Use them to fill, but check with your own gauge. Never trust the pump gauge as your measurement.
The gas station pump is the bathroom scale at the gym. Directionally useful, but don't take it to court.
That's a perfect way to put it. And just like a bathroom scale, what matters is consistency. Pick one gauge, use it every time, and you'll know what your tires are actually doing.
Okay, let's move to the second part of the prompt. Mixing tire manufacturers. This is one of those things where my gut says no, but I want to know if my gut is backed by physics or just superstition.
Your gut is mostly right, but the reasoning is more nuanced than most people think. Let's break down what mixing actually means. There are different levels of mixing. Putting two different brands on the front versus the rear axle is one thing. Putting different brands on the left and right side of the same axle is a different thing entirely. And mixing different tread patterns, different speed ratings, different load indices, each of these has its own set of risks.
It's not a simple yes or no.
It's a spectrum of bad ideas. Let's start with the worst version. Different tires on the same axle. Left and right. That is dangerous. You've got potentially different tread compounds, different grip levels, different hydroplaning resistance. So in an emergency braking situation or heavy rain, one side of the car behaves differently from the other. That can induce a spin. Tire Rack, which does extensive testing on this stuff, is very clear. Mismatched tires on the same axle compromise handling in ways that are hard to predict and impossible to compensate for.
Left-right mixing is a hard no.
Now, mixing front and rear axles. Different brands front, different brands rear, that's less catastrophic, but it's still not ideal. Modern cars are engineered with specific handling characteristics in mind. The tire is part of the suspension system. It's the first spring in the chain. Different tires have different sidewall stiffness, different tread squirm, different breakaway characteristics at the limit.
That's how the tire lets go when you're pushing too hard.
Some tires lose grip progressively. You feel it, you can catch it. Others are more abrupt. If the front tires let go gradually, but the rear snap loose without warning, that's a car that's going to spin and the driver won't see it coming. Most manufacturers design cars to understeer at the limit. The front loses grip first, the car plows straight, it's safer for average drivers. But if you've got grippier tires on the front and less grippy ones on the back, you can flip that balance and create an oversteer situation.
You're basically rewriting the car's handling script without telling the driver.
That's exactly what you're doing. And on an older car, which is what the prompt specifically asked about, it's even more pronounced. Older cars have less sophisticated suspension, less electronic intervention, no stability control, or very primitive stability control. So the tire mismatch has a bigger effect.
What about just mixing brands, but keeping the same type of tire? Say, two All Seasons from Michelin and two from Goodyear, but same size, same speed rating.
It's less bad, but the tread patterns are different. That means water evacuation is different. In heavy rain, one axle could hydroplane before the other. And the rubber compounds are different even within the same category. One company's all-season might be optimized for wet grip, another's for tread life. So you've still got an imbalance.
What's the one situation where mixing is actually acceptable?
If you're in a pinch, you've got a blowout, you're far from home, the only tire available is a different brand. Putting it on is better than driving on a donut spare at highway speeds, but you should replace it to match as soon as possible. And if you absolutely must mix, put the matched pair on the rear axle, even on a front-wheel drive car.
Why the rear?
Because if the rear loses grip, you spin. If the front loses grip, you understeer. Understeer is easier for a typical driver to manage. This is the advice from every major tire manufacturer and safety organization. New tires, or the grippier pair, go on the rear.
That's counterintuitive. Most people would think put the good tires on the drive wheels.
That's a common misconception. Tyrak actually did a demonstration video on this years ago that became famous in car circles. They put new tires on the front of a front-wheel drive car, worn tires on the rear, and took it out on a wet test track. The car spun at relatively low speed, then they swapped them. New tires rear, worn tires front, and the same car at the same speed just pushed wide in a controllable way. It's night and day.
The rule is, best tires on the back.
And ideally, all four match. Same brand, same model, same tread depth. That's the target.
All right, let's get to the third piece. Tread wear monitoring. How do you know when you're toast?
The classic method is the penny test. You take a penny, stick it in the tread groove with Lincoln's head upside down. If you can see the top of Lincoln's head, you're below 2/32 of an inch and the tire is legally worn out in most states. That's the minimum.
2/32 is basically a racing slick at that point.
It really is. And here's the thing. 2/32 is the legal minimum, but it's not the safe minimum. Tire performance in wet conditions starts degrading noticeably around 4/32. Below that, hydroplaning risk goes up dramatically. Consumer Reports testing shows that stopping distances in the wet can double between new tires and tires at 2/32.
That's not marginal. That's the difference between hitting something and not hitting something.
So the practical advice is, start shopping for tires at 4/32. Don't wait until 2.
How do you measure 4/32 without a specialized tool?
The quarter test. Same idea as the penny, but with a quarter. Stick it in the groove with Washington's head down. If the tread reaches the top of Washington's head, you've got about 4/32. That's your early warning.
Penny is the red alert. Quarter is the yellow light.
That's a great way to think about it. And you want to measure across multiple grooves, multiple spots around the tire. Tires don't wear evenly. The inside edge might be at 4/32 while the center is at 6. That tells you something about your alignment or inflation.
What are the wear patterns that tell a story?
This is where tire inspection gets interesting. The wear pattern is a diagnostic readout for your entire suspension. Center wear, where the middle of the tread is more worn than the edges. That's chronic overinflation. The tire is ballooning. Only the center touches the road properly.
Walking on tiptoes, like you said.
Shoulder wear, both edges worn more than the center. That's underinflation. The tire is concave, riding on its edges. Then you've got one-sided wear, where one edge is bald and the rest is fine. That's an alignment problem. Camber or toe is off. If you run your hand across the tread and it feels smooth one direction but jagged the other, like fish scales, that's a toe alignment issue. The tire is scrubbing sideways as it rolls.
Fish scale tires. That's a vivid image.
Then there's cupping or scalloping. That's when you get uneven high and low spots around the circumference of the tire. Looks like a choppy wave pattern. That usually means worn shocks or struts. The tire is bouncing instead of staying planted, and it's wearing in patches where it bounces hardest.
Your tires are basically a free suspension diagnostic.
They really are. And on an older car, which is what the prompt is asking about, this matters even more. Older cars are more likely to have worn suspension components, alignment issues, all the things that show up in tire wear. If you're driving a car with 150,000 miles on it, you should be looking at your tires not just for tread depth, but for patterns.
What about those tread wear indicator bars built into the tire?
Those are the wear bars, little raised bars that run across the tread grooves. When the tread wears down flush with those bars, you're at 2/32. They're useful, but they're a last resort. They don't tell you about uneven wear, and they don't give you the early warning at 4/32. They're the tire's way of saying you should have been paying attention months ago.
The tire's passive-aggressive way of telling you you failed.
And a lot of people don't even know they exist. They're built into every tire sold in the United States. It's been a federal requirement since the late 60s.
Let's talk about one thing the prompt didn't mention, but that connects to all of this. Even if the tread looks fine, tires have an expiration date.
This is huge. Rubber degrades over time regardless of mileage. The compounds oxidize. They harden. They lose elasticity. The tire industry generally recommends replacing tires after 6 to 10 years, regardless of tread depth. Most manufacturers say 6 years is when you should start inspecting annually, and 10 years is the absolute maximum.
How do you know how old your tires are?
Every tire has a DOT code on the sidewall. The last 4 digits tell you the week and year of manufacture. So a code ending in 2223 means the tire was made in the 22nd week of 2023. It's stamped right there on the tire. Most people have never looked at it.
I'm now wondering how old the tires on my car are, and I don't love the feeling.
It's one of those things where once you know, you can't unknow, and it matters especially for cars that don't get driven much. Low mileage, garage-kept cars. The tread looks brand new, but the rubber is 10 years old and has the grip of a hockey puck. That's a blowout waiting to happen on a hot day at highway speeds.
The garage queen with ancient rubber? It's a trap!
It's absolutely a trap, and it's not just about blowouts. Old hardened rubber has dramatically worse wet grip and braking performance, even if it holds air. The NHTSA has documented cases of tires failing due to age when the tread was still above the wear bars.
We've got pressure, mixing, tread wear, and age. It feels like the theme here is that tires are the most neglected safety system on the car.
They really are. Think about it. Your tires are the only part of the car that touches the road. Four contact patches, each about the size of your hand. That's it. That's what's keeping a 2-ton vehicle connected to the pavement at 70 miles an hour in the rain. And most people check their tire pressure when the light comes on and otherwise never think about them.
The contact patch thing is always humbling. Four handprints between you and the guardrail.
That contact patch shrinks when you're underinflated because the tire isn't making full contact. It shrinks when you're overinflated because the tire is crowned. It shrinks when the tread is worn because the grooves that channel water are gone. Every mistake you make with tire maintenance reduces that already tiny connection to the road.
You mentioned the NHTSA study earlier. What else is in the data on this?
The NHTSA found that about 11% of crashes involving tire-related issues had tires that were underinflated by 25% or more. And in a separate survey, they found that roughly half of all vehicles on the road have at least one tire that's underinflated, not a few percent.
Half of all cars are driving around with compromised contact patches.
The driver has no idea. That's the wild part. A tire can be significantly underinflated and look completely normal to the naked eye. You can't eyeball 5 or 8 PSI low. You need a gauge.
Which brings us back to the monthly check. It's not a suggestion. It's the bare minimum.
It really is. And if you have an older car without TPMS, which the prompt is asking about, you don't even get the warning light. You're flying blind. The only way you know is if you check.
What about those aftermarket TPMS systems you can install? Are they any good?
Some of them are decent. There are valve cap sensors that screw onto the existing valve stems and transmit to a little display you stick on the dash. Brands like TireMinder and TimeMate make them for RV and trailer applications, but they work on regular cars too. The downside is they're exposed. They can get stolen or damaged. And they add a tiny bit of weight to the valve stem, which on an older car with rubber stems can cause a slow leak over time.
It's a solution that might create the problem it's trying to solve.
In some cases, yes. The better option for an older car is to just build the habit. Check the pressure on the first of every month. Put a reminder in your phone. It takes 2 minutes.
The low-tech solution wins again.
It often does. A $5 mechanical gauge and a calendar reminder beats a $100 sensor system that you'll ignore anyway.
Let's circle back to mixing tires for a moment. You said left-right is a hard no, front-rear is not ideal, but survivable. What about mixing different types, like all seasons on the front and winter tires on the rear?
That's actually worse than mixing brands within the same type. You're now dealing with fundamentally different rubber compounds. Winter tires are made of a softer compound that stays pliable in cold temperatures. All seasons harden up below about 45 degrees. So in cold weather, the all-season axle has dramatically less grip than the winter tire axle. That's a car that's going to behave unpredictably at the limit.
What about the reverse? Winter tires on the front of a front-wheel drive car, all seasons on the rear.
That's the classic mistake. People think, it's a front-wheel drive car, I need the snow tires on the front for traction, and they're right about going. The winter tires will help you accelerate in snow. But what happens when you brake or turn? The rear end has less grip and will want to come around. You've created a car that goes fine, but can't stop or corner without spinning.
You've built a car that's great at getting into trouble and terrible at getting out of it.
And tire shops see this every winter. Someone comes in with four bald all seasons, wants to save money by putting two snow tires on the front. A responsible shop will refuse to do it. Most chain tire stores have a policy against it.
Because they don't want to get sued when the car spins into a ditch.
And beyond the liability, it's unsafe. If you're going to use winter tires, use 4. Same goes for all seasons versus summer tires. Don't mix categories.
What's your take on the tread depth gauge? The little tool you stick in the groove.
I love tread depth gauges. They're $5, they fit in your glove box, and they give you an actual number instead of a coin and a guess. You can measure each groove individually and track wear over time. If you really want to be nerdy about it, you can log your tread depths every oil change and see exactly how your tires are wearing. That data tells you when to rotate, when to align, when to replace.
You log your tread depths, don't you?
I have a spreadsheet.
Of course you do.
It's satisfying. There's a pattern. You can see the wear rate. You can predict when you'll hit 430 seconds. It takes the guesswork out of it.
The quantified self, but for your tires.
The quantified car. And it's not just for nerds. If you're on a budget and you need to plan for a tire purchase, knowing you've got 6 months before you hit the wear bars versus 2 months is useful. Tires are expensive. Planning ahead matters.
What's the price range people should expect for a decent set of tires?
It varies enormously by size, but for a typical sedan or small crossover, a good set of all-season tires from a reputable brand, Michelin, Continental, Bridgestone, Goodyear, is going to run somewhere between $500 and $800 installed. You can spend less, but tires are one of those things where the cheap option is often expensive in the long run. Cheap tires wear faster, they're louder, they have worse wet grip. The difference between a $60 tire and a $120 tire is not just branding. It's compound chemistry, tread design, construction quality.
The bitter taste of poor quality lingers long after the sweetness of low price is forgotten.
And with tires, poor quality can kill you, so it's not just an inconvenience.
You mentioned rotation earlier. Where does that fit into all of this?
Rotation is how you keep wear even across all 4 tires. Front tires wear differently than rear tires because they do the steering and, on most cars, most of the braking. On a front-wheel drive car, the fronts also do the driving, so they wear even faster. If you never rotate, your front tires will be bald while the rears still have half their tread. And then you're back to the mixing problem. Mismatched tread depths front to rear.
Rotation prevents you from accidentally creating the mixing problem on your own car.
The general recommendation is rotate every 5,000 to 7,000 miles. A lot of people just do it with every oil change. It's an easy rhythm.
The rotation pattern matters, right? It's not just swapping front to back.
Depends on the car. For front-wheel drive, the standard pattern is front tires go straight back, rear tires cross to the front, so the rear left goes to the front right, rear right to front left. For rear-wheel drive, it's the reverse. Rear tires go straight forward, front tires cross to the back. For all-wheel drive, you typically cross all 4. And directional tires, which have a tread pattern designed to only spin one way, can only be rotated front to back on the same side.
That's the ones with a V-shaped tread pattern.
They're designed to channel water from the center out to the edges. If you mount them backwards, they channel water to the center, which is the opposite of what you want in the rain.
The tire equivalent of an umbrella that funnels water onto your head.
That's a beautiful image. So directional tires have an arrow on the sidewall showing the rotation direction, and you can't cross them during rotation. You just swap front to rear on each side.
We've covered a lot of ground here. Pressure, gauges, mixing, tread wear, age, rotation. What's the one thing you wish every driver knew about their tires?
I think it's that tires are not a set and forget component. They're a consumable that requires active attention. People understand they need to change their oil. They understand they need to replace brake pads. But tires occupy this weird space where people think of them as just being there until they go flat. And that's dangerous. Tires are degrading every mile you drive, and they're degrading even when you're not driving. They need monitoring.
It's the only safety system that's constantly wearing down, and nobody treats it that way.
Your airbags aren't slowly depleting. Your seatbelts aren't getting thinner with use, but your tires are losing millimeters of tread every 1,000 miles, and the difference between safe and unsafe is a few millimeters of rubber.
The difference shows up exactly when you need it most, the moment you're counting on your tires to save you.
That's the cruel irony. Tires perform adequately right up until they don't, and the moment they don't is usually the worst possible moment. Nobody hydroplanes on a sunny day at 30 miles an hour. It happens at night, in a downpour, at highway speed, with traffic around you.
The tire's final exam comes without warning, and you don't get a retake.
That's it, exactly.
So for the listener who's been driving the same car for years and hasn't thought about their tires since the last time they bought them, what's the Monday morning action plan?
Walk out to your car. Find the sticker in the door jamb. Note the recommended pressure. Then check all four tires with a gauge. Your own gauge, not the gas station pump. If they're low, fill them to the number on the sticker. Not the number on the tire. Check your tread depth. Use a quarter. If Washington's head is showing, start budgeting for new tires. If Lincoln's head is showing on a penny, you're overdue. Find the dot code on each tire. Look at the last four digits. If those tires are more than 6 years old, start paying close attention. If they're more than 10, replace them regardless of tread.
Step four is build the habit. Monthly pressure check. Tread check with every oil change. Rotation on schedule.
That's it. It takes maybe 10 minutes a month. And it's the difference between catching a problem early and finding out about it in the rain at 70 miles an hour.
The boring maintenance that saves your life. That's basically the thesis of this whole episode.
It really is. Tires are not glamorous, they're not exciting, but they're the foundation everything else in the car depends on. You could have the best brakes in the world, the most sophisticated stability control, the smartest all-wheel drive system. None of it matters if your tires can't grip the road.
That's the whole deal. Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
Horseshoe crab blood contains a copper-based molecule called hemocyanin that turns milky blue when exposed to oxygen. In the 1950s, scientists discovered that the blood clots almost instantly when it encounters bacterial toxins, leading to a test that became the global standard for detecting contamination in vaccines and medical equipment.
Milky blue blood that clots on contact with bacteria. That's not a fun fact. That's a horror movie.
We inject it into things.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. We're back next week with a new prompt. Until then, check your tire pressure.
Find your door jam sticker. It misses you.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.